She's made some other bad choices in regards to her daughter. This was the last straw for Greta. He'd experienced just that the day before with Hope, right before he lost his shit on Greta. What were the straws that came before? He had no idea. He hadn't asked. He hadn't even known she had a mother in town, because he hadn't asked. Hell, he didn't even know until yesterday morning what her surname was, because he hadn't freaking asked. It could be they had a screwed up relationship that was a vicious cycle of this kind of shit that he'd just got caught up in. It could be Greta and everything about her being the exact opposite of the nominal he'd experienced with her mother. But it was more than enough. This was a long time coming. Again, he had no idea. He hadn't asked. He'd just laid her out and walked out. Walked out on her. Again. But this time, he'd done it ugly. Fuck, he whispered. You think you escaped narrowly. I'm cluing into the fact that maybe the one who escaped was me. He stared at his open door in front of him and repeated a whispered, fuck. He lifted his hands, rubbed them over his face, and since he couldn't do dick about that now, he needed to catch a killer, deal with his daughter, try to decide if it was right or would cause World War III if he backed his son's play to live with him exclusively, come to terms with the fact that his wife had divorced him over not buying her a goddamned ring, and he needed to let Greta have some time, he'd sort it out later. However that needed to be. You know how it needs to be, asshole, he thought. And this time you're fucked. These thoughts occurred to him when he made it to the front of his desk. So he leaned into his hands on it and dropped his head.
That all sounds really complicated, Hicks.
No, sweetheart. All that is really fucking simple. It was simple. It was. And he'd complicated it again, being a dick. Fuck, he whispered. It was good it was beers with Donna, Tommy, and Toast that night. He was going to need them.
Chapter 14. Lock this baby. Greta.
That was fun. We won. Now pizza, Maple cried, dancing in front of Lou and me, holding Andy's hand, Snow on his other side, walking so close to my baby bro that their arms were brushing. Andy, in his Glossop Raiders sweatshirt, turned and grinned at me. He'd had a blast at the game. The Raiders won. And it hadn't been the torture for me I'd thought it would be. It was the Friday after the Friday that Hicks had walked into my house and gutted me. I wanted to say I was over it. I wasn't over it. I wanted to say I was glad for Faith, but not for Hickson, that a sketch had been in this week's guide of the man who killed Faith's husband, and rumor around town was that the sheriff had everything he needed, including a witness who saw Nat pick up the guy who killed him. They just needed to find that man. But I was happy for him. I wanted to say that I hoped like hell they found the guy so Faith could have some closure, and not so Hickson could also put this behind him. But I hoped like hell they found this guy, for both reasons. I also wanted to say he hadn't looked amazingly handsome in the picture the guide printed of him and his deputies, in full uniform, standing at the gravesite at Nat's funeral last Sunday. Fortunately, they'd printed that picture, not one of Faith or her kids. And he didn't. He'd looked devastatingly handsome. And I knew he'd looked devastatingly handsome before I'd even seen the picture. Because I saw it firsthand, seeing as I'd been at that same funeral. I'd also gone to pains to avoid the spear of his eyes I caught twice from where I was sitting. And he was standing with his deputies at the side of the chair set up for funeral goers. And even though Lou had used her magical powers to put the hush on any talk about Hickson and Hope Drake around me, I still heard my fair share. And I wanted to say I wasn't skimming the range of emotions between interested and concerned when gossip reported that Hickson had instituted a veritable freeze-out of his ex-wife. And it was a known fact His son was angling to live solely with his father, thus giving rise to speculation both had learned why Hope had divorced her husband. But I absolutely was skimming that range of emotions. What I wasn't doing was seeing, speaking to, or sleeping with Hicks and Drake. This, regardless of the fact that he'd called on Sunday after the funeral, a call for obvious reasons I did not take. However, he'd left a message in his lovely, deep voice that said simply,
"Greta, we need to talk."
I had not replied. I'd blocked his number, too. I was learning. I was learning I didn't need my mother's malicious antics, and I didn't need some man I barely knew treating me like dirt. So I wasn't going to have either. I was going to have Andy, Lou, her girls, my work, my singing, and the rest could go to hell. Now I had Andy for the weekend. When I'd told Gemini my brother wanted to catch a Raiders game, he'd found an act to take my place. I'd also cleared my client schedule for Saturday. So I had a full weekend with my brother to look forward to, and the Raiders winning to start that off was indication it was going to be a good one. "Race you to the car?" Snow asked Andy.
"Yeah,"
Andy yelled. She took off. Maple let him go and took off too. Andy, knowing he could beat them by a mile, shot another grin over his shoulder at me, this a goofy one. He gave it a few beats to give them a head start, then he took off after them at a sedate lope. "He's da bomb," Lou said from her place striding beside me as we walked out with the rest of the town from Raider Field. She was right. I looked up to her, then back to where we were heading, watching the girls and Andy weave through the crowd. The girls just going for it. Andy stopping every once in a while to say,
"Hey, sorry, and pardon, and gotta keep up with the girls."
In other words, they were going to beat him by a mile. I watched them start to pull away in a break in the crowd, and did it, noting, "It's weird, you know. I get so pissed. I shook my head. I grieve for the life he could have had. Then I realize if he'd had that, I wouldn't have this Andy. And I don't know whether it's right or wrong to feel blessed I have this Andy when he could have had so much more. It's never wrong to love someone just as they come, Lou told me. I glanced at her before again looking ahead. You're right, I know that. But I'm not sure it's healthy I'm still holding on to some of that, Lou. It happened nearly a decade ago. My grandma died when my mom was 22, and to this day, on grandma's birthday and the anniversary of her death, you handle mom with care and don't mention her red eyes. That was over 4 decades ago, Greta. I think what would be unhealthy is if you tried to stop yourself from feeling grief. The life he could have had that your mom took from him will always be something he lost, so it'll always be something you wished he had. Just feel what you feel, babe. And shit. I looked up to her after she said that last word to see her gaze narrowed on something in the distance. What? I asked. Hickson, she hissed. My eyes flew to where she was looking, and there he was, standing talking to a bunch of people just inside the chain-link fence that ran around the field, wearing a navy V-neck sweater with a t-shirt under it and faded jeans, making that simplicity look awesome. His younger daughter was not too far from him, looking like she was doing a pirouette with 2 other girls who were doing the same. Shit. We have to get by him without him seeing me, I said under my breath, like he was standing 1 foot away, not 30. Doing this, grabbing Lou's arm and getting close to her. I gave it a yank. Move to my other side. Why? She asked. He should see you. You look fine. You always look fine, but with that pink in your cheeks and that cute jacket and those jeans that make your awesome ass look even more awesome, he should get a load of what he's missing. Lou, I snapped. No, she returned calmly, moving a half step away, forcing my hand to fall from her arm. Screw Hicks and Drake. Fabulous. I kept walking, giving in, but ordered, don't look at him. She said nothing. We carried on, and I hazarded a glance up at her. She was looking right in his direction, and I knew by the way she was skewering something with her eyes, it was him.
You're not helping, I told her.
He's not looking at me. He doesn't even know I'm here. Her attention came to me. He's looking at you. And I'm glad, because right now, he's probably missing a little of that action. And I'm not just talking about the fact you are fine, and he was tapping that. I'm talking about the fact pretty much everyone knows, he now knows Hope is a spoiled rotten bitch. And pretty much everyone knows after he escaped a full lifetime of that, he let a great thing slip right through his fingers. It felt like my heart skipped a beat after the first part of what she said, and that skip was more like a walloping thump, so I kinda didn't hear the rest of it.
How lame would it be if I raced you to the car?
I asked. Super double extra lame, she answered.
Ugh.
We made it through the gate without incident, and then I stepped it up in my high-heeled boots to get to the car. I didn't run. I didn't dilly-dally. I wanted to be able to say this was because I wanted to make sure Andy and the girls had made it safely to the car. But it totally wasn't. It was the pounding that woke me up. But when I was awake, I heard the rain.
Shit. Rain.
I tossed back the covers and raced out of my room, across the hall to the room I thought of as Andy's, even though he didn't sleep there very often. I threw open the door. Heard the source of the noise, but didn't see Andy, so I closed it. And there he was on the opposite side of the door, standing, hands to the wall, slamming his head against it.
Sweetie,
I whispered, rushing to him, putting my hands on him.
Shh, just rain. It's just rain,
I soothed. Fingers curled tight around his biceps, I pulled back. He kept slamming his head against the wall.
Andy, darling, please stop doing that. I pulled harder. Come away from the wall.
He didn't stop, even as he resisted my pull.
Andrew!
I snapped.
Come away from the wall!
I tightened my hold and gave his arms a yank, only for him to give my hands a powerful shirk at the same time his body jerked forcefully to the side. I lost hold, falling back a step, and when I went to move forward and regain it, he lifted an elbow and drew it back sharply, catching me in the eye. I cried out and fell backward. Tripping on the edge of the rug under the bed, I fell further, hitting the end of the bed, sliding down it and falling to my ass on the floor.
Ta-ta.
I blinked the stars out of my eyes and looked up at him. He was turned, arms crossed, hands cupping his elbows, swaying and looking at me. And I didn't know if he understood he'd put me where I was and felt bad, or if he was still freaking about the rain.
Ta-ta. Ta-ta, ta-ta,
he chanted, then lunged forward, coming to his knees, putting me in a tight grip, and yanking me to him as he fell to his ass, burrowing into me as I slid my arms around him.
Ta-ta, 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 ta-ta. It's okay.
I ran a hand over his hair.
It's okay. I'm here. You're okay. I'm okay. It's all okay.
I didn't know it was forecast to rain. If I knew, I'd have taken him back to the home. He wasn't good in the rain. The doctors didn't think it had to do with the damage to his brain. Not in that way. They thought it had to do with the fact it had been raining hard when he'd had his accident. And this was the way his mind dealt with that psychological trauma.
Let's get you to bed, yeah? Let's get up in bed.
I cooed. It took a while for me to get him up, but I did. Got him in bed, and then I slid in with him. He rocked as I held him in my arms, shushing him and fussing him until he fell asleep. I kept doing it until the rain stopped, and I continued to do it until I felt certain it wouldn't start again. Only then did I slide away, tuck him in, then go downstairs to grab some ice for my eye, because it hurt like hell. I took the ice in a Ziploc bag wrapped in a dish towel with me when I returned to bed. I did it with my door open, Andy's open. But even so, I didn't get much sleep. Andy was up, sitting at a stool at my kitchen island, scooping up a spoonful of Trix from one of the huge bowls I used for ice cream during my PMS times. And other times besides, if I was honest, when I walked down in the morning. I kicked myself for oversleeping, but was relieved like crazy he just got himself a bowl of cereal, and didn't do what he sometimes did before I learned, or more accurately, Keith and I had learned, not to oversleep. That being, walking out the front door and taking a stroll. My relief didn't last long. When he turned to me, dropped his spoon into the bowl with a plunk and a splash of milk and stared at me. I knew why. I had a shiner. Crap. Andy?
Me.
He straightened from his slump over the bowl, his anxiety chasing away his ability to find words.
Bad. Me bad.
Unfortunately, since it was random, what he would remember and what he wouldn't, he remembered last night. I moved to him and put my hand on the island. It's okay. His eyes were riveted to my black one.
Bruce.
It's okay, darling. It doesn't hurt. I lied, then gave him a huge smile. And it makes me look badass. That wasn't a lie, but unfortunately, it didn't make me look, say, Chuck Norris badass. And not just because Chuck Norris was so badass he'd never get a black eye. It made me look trailer trash had a rougher than normal night badass. His head twitched. He looked to me, his gaze moving over my face, then his lips tentatively curled up.
Put up your dukes,
he choked. I did, punching him lightly with one on his biceps. He started laughing. Crisis averted. I moved in and gave him a kiss on the side of his head. Then I moved back, leaned against the island, and asked, What are we gonna do today? You wanna go shopping for some new clothes? He turned back to his cereal, but he twisted his neck to frown at me.
No shopping.
Just like a man. Wanna go to the shelter and play with the dogs? I suggested. He liked that, and they liked when we came. Those dogs needed love and attention, and Andy had the capacity to give a lot of both. But he frowned.
They won't let me take one.
This was new, and it was true. Maybe I needed to get him a dog. Of course, that would mean me taking care of said dog while Andy only had visitation. Next idea. Parks and Recreation Marathon? I tried again. His face lit up.
Yeah.
He loved that show. We'd seen every episode at least 4 times. Thank goodness I got the stuff to make pulled pork, so it can cook all day while we laze in front of the TV. I replied.
Pulled pork, Tata. Cool. Thank you.
He loved my pulled pork. Right. We have a plan. I'll get that in the crock pot while you finish your tricks, and then get a shower. I'll get cleaned up and we'll spend the day with Leslie Knope and Andy Dwyer.
Awesome,
he muttered, turning back to his tricks. I moved around the island to get the crock pot out of the cabinet under it. Andy ate his tricks and got a shower as I put the pork shoulder in the crock pot with the rest of my secret ingredients. Secret to the extent Andy didn't know them, but the rest of the world did, since the recipe was on the side of the spice packet. We watched Parks and Rec. When the time came, we pigged out on pulled pork, homemade macaroni salad, and waffle fries. Not long enough after, we scooped up ice cream in my special ice cream and Andy cereal bowls. Sometime after that, I went to bed feeling like I weighed a ton, and having a dull throb in my head from watching too much TV, not being active enough, and eating way too much. I didn't care even a little bit. On Sunday, Andy was feeling the pull to play with the dogs at the shelter. So we did that, after I got a latte, and Andy got a hot cocoa at Baby Cakes, during which Andy, as was his norm, charmed the pants off of Baby Cakes Watson, the owner, who had that moniker for reasons unknown to me. She also had a history of dogs she named the same thing, one after the other that replaced one when it had died. They were all poodles, and she was currently on Baby Cakes 4, who was in attendance during our visit at the coffee house. Then again, they always were. A standard red, who had replaced the sadly departed Baby Cakes 3. A standard blue, who had died last year. After playing with the dogs and cats at the shelter, we came home and watched movies. After that, I took him for ribs at Po Jack's barbecue place in Moore Springs to finish up our barbecue-themed weekend. Then, my weekend with my brother was done. So I took him home, went back to my place, made myself tea, gave myself my moment, and finally went out to my porch. Alone. just as I'd done every night since Hicks ended things. It was Monday night, and I was in the produce section at the grocery store when the first thing happened. That being Sherry walking her cart up to mine and crying, "Oh my God, your eye!" This, or a version of it, had been the refrain all day, and from the workers at the shelter, baby cakes, and the folks who saw me at Sunnydown. I was learning that a black eye didn't start out black. It started kind of faded purple. It got a deep, ugly, horrid black that defied concealer after a few days. Andy winged me with an elbow accidentally. I told her, also a constant refrain that day, though I didn't share that with others in front of Andy. It looks worse than it is. That last was true. It hurt the first few days, but now it was just a dull ache I barely felt at all. "Oh, you poor thing," she murmured, studying my eye before she brightened. "Did you hear?" I heard a lot of things. I worked in a salon. So my reply was, "I don't know. About hell." "Hell?" "Sorry?" I asked. "Hell, what's his name? I don't remember his last name. I kind of don't want to. He's kind of a jerk, but I've met his wife, Ashley, in passing. She's nice. Not sure you know her. I think she gets her hair done at the cutting edge." She was rambling, and I was tired, in heels and hungry, so I cut in to say, "I don't think I know him," in a hopefully not rude effort to get her to move this along. "He's one of Hickson's deputies." "Oh, boy. He found the gun that killed Faith's husband," she declared. I stood still and stared at her. "It's really good he did that. Apparently he spent ages working hunches on his free time, out with metal detectors with a couple of his buddies on game trails, hiking trails, roadsides, and he found it on a stretch of road over in Sheridan County." "That's excellent," I told her. "Yeah," she grinned. "One step closer." I hoped so, for Faith. And damn it, Hickson. "And, well," Sherry's look turned cautious, "you probably heard Shaw moved in with Hickson, permanent-like." "Uh-oh." "Yeah?" I murmured. "Is it okay to talk about this?" she queried. "I mean, I know you two aren't an item anymore, but it didn't last a long time, and... Hey, by the way, you gonna go out with Mrs. Swanson's Owen? She's telling everyone she's gonna set you two up." "Crap. I'm just kinda doing my own thing at the moment," I replied. She nodded, like she, a woman who was now 36, hadn't been married to her husband since she was 20, and she had any concept what doing her own thing as a single gal really meant. Then she kept talking. "Well, as you can imagine, Hope is beside herself, but thinks she's finally getting smart, 'cause see, everyone knows this wasn't Hickson's idea. It was Shaw's. He's real mad at her." She leaned in. "Real mad." She leaned back. "I thought when I heard that she'd been spreading it around that she blames Hicks, but apparently Shaw threw such a fit at having to go back to his mama's yesterday, Jep had to get involved. He came into town, sat down with his girl, told her the way of things, and the girls went back. But Shaw didn't. And all day today, all Hope's saying is that her boy needs his daddy at his age, and she thinks it's good, Shaw having time with his father, learning to be a man before he goes off to be a Marine." "Well, I hope that all works out," I said. And I did, but I'd rather not be talking about it. "Girls won't be far behind, I reckon. They learn the full truth about their mama," Sherry predicted. "Well, I hope with that they never do," I shared. And I hoped that too. A lot. "Me too, but," she shrugged. "Things got a way of getting out, and Hope's on the back foot now. She's scrambling, losing Hicks like she did, losing her son like that. Folks knowing why, and they're being nice enough, but she's also feeling the cold shoulder. She's got a lot to make up for, pain she's caused. So now she's got Julie Baker spreading around how proud she is of Hicks, this sad business with Nat Calloway, and how far they got when they started with a whole load of nothing. Julie's spreading it wide how Hope always knew what a good policeman he was, and how she isn't glad how he got the reason to prove it, but she's still glad the county knows for certain we're in good hands." "God, Hope Drake was a piece of work." "Mm-hmm," I murmured. Sherry gave me a close look that shifted to a horrified one. "You aren't okay with talking about this," she said, aghast at what she thought was her insensitivity. She was sweet, and she was right in what she'd said earlier. Hickson and I weren't an item anymore. We never officially were. It was just me who was an idiot bent on proving that fact repeatedly with all men. So she shouldn't feel bad. It's just that I've been on my feet all day, I lied, twisted from my cart and lifted up a foot to show her one of my pumps that I could run a marathon in, even right then. Okay, maybe not right then, but if pressed, I could maybe walk a 5K. And I just want to get my groceries, get home, and get these off. But Andy ate me out of house and home, so I have to restock or go hungry. And from what Andy and I put away this weekend, I can't put that off and just buy some fried chicken at the deli. I need something green, or my body is gonna shut down. I hear you, she replied and smiled. Though I don't, because I only wore heels to my prom and my wedding, but those were enough. So I also do, and I'll let you go. Thanks, babe, and it was good to see you, Sherry. You too, honey. Give that brother of yours a hug from me when you see him again, and you should bring him for another day in the salon sometime. I wasn't there any of the times you've brought him, but all the girls say he's great, and I'd love to meet him. Good idea. I'll talk with Andy about that. Great. Get done with your shopping, get yourself home, and I'll talk to you later. She raised a hand, gave me a wave, put it back to her cart, and motored off. I grabbed my salad fixins, fruit, and wheeled my cart into the small sea of aisles that were half the number of any King Supers in Denver, but still managed by some miracle to have all the stuff. I did this, trying to put all Sherry had shared out of my mind, and failing miserably. They got the gun. Good. That meant at least that crazy drifter wouldn't shoot anybody else, I hoped. Also, Hickson's son had turned his back on his mother. I had no idea if that was good or bad, but in one way or another, no matter the reason, any child doing that was bad. And Hope was backpedaling. I had no idea how that would go. All I knew, and I knew it well, was that Hickson Drake had one hell of a temper, so if he reacted the way he did to spending time with my mother, him discovering his wife ended a 2-decade-long marriage over a piece of expensive jewelry, well, she was screwed. I was in the coffee and tea section when the next thing happened, and it was a lot worse than Sherry gossiping about Hickson and Hope Drake. I also had my mind filled with what she'd said, much of it about Hickson, so my mind was filled with him. Therefore, I was not prepared for the man himself to make an appearance. But this he did, saying from close to my side, Greta? I turned my head from perusing the tea selection and stared up at him standing right there, at my side. God, that thick, dark hair, with its minimal but awesome silver flecks, his height, those broad shoulders, his pool blue eyes. It was hateful he was so beautiful. He didn't stare at me. His eyes narrowed on my shiner, and his face turned to granite. What the fuck? He whispered. Hickson, I whispered back. Suddenly, and honest to God, I didn't know how it happened or how it happened so fast. I didn't have hands to my cart and head turned to Hickson Drake. I had my back pinned to shelves and Hickson Drake in my space, his thumb curved around the bottom of my jaw, fingers splayed along my cheek, tilting my head back, his face in mine, his eyes sweltering, his voice an enraged, loud rumble. What the fuck? He near to bellowed. Who did this to you? He demanded to know. It was just a... His hand slid from my jaw to clamp, firm but still surprisingly gentle, around the side of my neck. Why didn't you report this to me? My head twitched in confusion. Report what? I asked. I'm the sheriff, Greta, he bit out. A man takes his fist to you. You call the fucking sheriff.
A man didn't...
Who did it?
Hickson, it was just...
He got nose to nose with me. Who fucking touched you?
God, it was infuriating how he never let me speak. Step back, I demanded.
Greta, tell me who did this to you,
he growled. Take your hand off me, Sheriff, and step back, I yelled. He stared into my eyes and didn't move. Back! I shouted. He stepped back and took his hand from my neck, but he did it putting his other one to my cart and holding it steady, angling his body, me imprisoned by the cart, his frame, and the shelves.
Talk to me,
he ordered. I was at that moment very aware we had an audience. I didn't look from Hickson. It's not your business.
A man harms a woman in my county, it's my business.
He forced out between clenched teeth. It's not what you think. Now he was letting me finish sentences, but he still didn't listen to me because he didn't refer to that with his next. He just continued on with what he had to say.
And I'll make this clear to you right here. I don't give a shit you've blocked my calls. Any man harms you, Greta, you tell me, and I deal with it for you first as a man, then as the sheriff.
What?
No.
He wasn't going to put his dibs in to look after me after he stood in my house and gutted me. Step away, I ordered.
Talk to me.
Step away, I yelled. He dipped his face in mine and roared,
talk to me.
My brother did it. All right? He doesn't like rain, freaked out, elbowed me in the face. He slid back an inch and stared at me in surprise. It's fine. I'm fine. He's fine. Now step back, I screeched the last.
Your brother?
He asked a whole lot more calmly. I wasn't so calm. He didn't get to pin me against shelves like some alpha male run amok and ask me questions he should have asked me when he was sleeping in my bed and eating breakfast at my kitchen island. My brother, I bit out. Now, Sheriff, you don't get to do this. You made things clear in my living room and, I don't know, say just now, jumping to conclusions I'd be stupid enough and also slutty enough to get myself another man about a week after you dumped me, before we even had a date. And then, letting that man hit me without turning his ass into the cops.
That's not what I thought.
What did you think? God, why had I asked? I needed to get out of there.
Your mother is connected to Kavanaugh Becker, and he's not a nice guy, but he is a guy who has a posse of equally not nice guys.
I've never even heard that name in my life.
Okay, sweetheart, but it doesn't make that fact any less true.
Sweetheart. Oh, shit. I was going to cry. I hadn't cried since it happened. I couldn't cry. Step back, Hickson, I whispered.
Greta.
Step back, I shrieked. He stepped back. I snatched my purse out of the seat of the cart, turned and ignored the onlookers we had, especially the sheer number of them, as I ran out of the grocery store. Leaving my groceries behind, leaving my cart behind, probably leaving a healthy dose of my dignity behind, thus focusing on the fact I had leftover pulled pork in the fridge. I probably couldn't eat it without throwing it up, but in case I managed to pull myself together, at least I wouldn't starve. The ringing of the doorbell came first. When I ignored that, the knocking came. When I ignored that, with only intermittent spurts of respite, it just kept coming. Finally, and by finally I meant this lasted probably 5 minutes, but that was a long 5 minutes. I moved and stood on the opposite end to the door at the picture window at the front of my house and peeked through the windows. From my angle, I couldn't see who was at the door, but I could see a Bronco in my drive. Not at the curb this time. Oh, no. He wasn't trying to share with anyone who saw it that he was there for just a visit and not for an all-night booty call by parking casually at the curb. He also wasn't intent on sharing with me that he was going to do what he had to do and get the hell out of there, and he wanted to do it without the bothersome effort of reversing out of my drive. Nope. He'd parked in my driveway, like his badass and super cool. It sucked, but it was true. Bronco belonged there. He wanted to push this? Fine. I had a few things to say to make things clear, too. And maybe he might allow me to finish a few sentences for once so I could say them. But after I did, we'd be done. For good. So I went to the door, unlocked it, pulled it open, and glared into Hickson Drake's devastatingly handsome face. What? I snapped.
Can I come in?
He asked gently. Fuck him. And fuck his gentle. Be my guest, I declared, stepping back and moving away, far away, putting the couch between me and him. He walked to the back of it, his eyes never leaving me, and stopped.
Greta?
I let you in here, because this time I have a few things to say, and if you don't want to listen, you can leave right now. He just held my gaze and said nothing. He also didn't move. I took that as indication he was going to listen, so I launched in. Not that you deserve an explanation, but it'll make, I jerked a thumb at myself, me, feel better, to share with you my relationship with my mother is non-existent. From the moment she nearly killed my brother in a drunk driving accident, her being the drunk, she became nothing to me but a nuisance I had to throw money at way too often to stop her from interfering with my life. Something I'll also share, because I'm feeling in the mood that has stopped very recently. She wasn't liking that all that much, even though apparently she's found another meal ticket, so she took that out on me and did it through you. Several moments after I quit talking, Hickson asked,
She almost killed your brother?
I jerked up my chin. That record I told you about. She served 8 months. However, if it was up to me, after what she did to him, she'd still be in prison, rotting. Again, several moments after I stopped, he asked,
And your brother?
He's at Sunnydown. He has a TBI, severe issues with recall, deficits in attention and concentration, problems reading and writing, lack of motivation, he has episodes. Sometimes they're seizures, sometimes they're aggressive. He also has regressive behaviors that the doctors think have nothing to do with the TBI and everything to do with the trauma of having our mother be a mother who was okay with being shit-faced and picking up her 15-year-old son from a party in the rain. And that also explains the rain. He gets agitated and sometimes harms himself when it's raining. It rained Friday night. He was spending the weekend with me. He had an episode. I tried to stop him from hurting himself. He caught me with an elbow. I pointed with my whole hand, fingers out straight and pressed together, to my eye, and then offered my conclusion. That's it. So we're done. Finished. As you said, over. Thank you for listening and have a nice night. Don't worry, I'll lock the door after you leave. Again with the gentle when he replied,
There's more to say.
You're right, there is. I agreed and then gave him exactly that. Even if we were together, it would not be your right to pin me against shelves in a grocery store or anywhere. It would also not be your right to detain me in any way if I didn't so wish, especially after I repeatedly asked you to step back.
I mentioned this the other night, but as I unfortunately conveyed, I wasn't in a space to be as forthcoming as I should have been, since I also unfortunately assumed incorrectly that you already knew. But Kavanaugh Becker cooks meth. A lot of it. In this county. And he's tight with your mother.
I stared at him. God. God, my mother.
He's a dangerous man.
Hickson carried on.
He cooks it and distributes it out of this county, but he doesn't deal it in this county. Regardless, to do what he does and to get as wealthy as he is doing it, he's good at it, but doesn't keep great company. After your mother and Becker had their fun with me, Becker paid a visit to me at my department the next day and shared your mother is not happy you've cut her out. It isn't a leap, baby, with the games they played with me, the way they both were during that, to think that something broke with that and they came after you.
Okay, well, damn, that made sense. And damn again, Mom had a really bad guy in her corner. I hadn't thought of that at the time. What with losing Hickson taking precedence and all. But I thought of it now. I bit my lip and looked away, considering the many atrocities she could inflict on me with these new resources. And Andy. Shit.
I'm sorry.
When those words came from Hickson, I looked back at him. He continued talking.
I saw your eye, and I've not been in a good way about what I said to you, how I left it between us. You blocking my calls, me worried that they might be affecting your life and how that might be, and I didn't curb my reaction. I should have, in a grocery store, in your living room, it doesn't matter. But you have a black eye, Greta, and I've had a couple of those. They don't feel good, and there's never a good way to get one. I just jump to what I hope you get now are valid, if erroneous, conclusions about how you got yours. Crap. That made sense, too. And crap again. If something like that was swirling around someone I cared about and I saw they had a black eye, I might pin them against some shelves, too, to demand their story. And I wasn't even a 6'1" built badge-wielding alpha male. I didn't give him that. I snapped. Fine.
I still shouldn't have pinned you in like that and forced a scene.
You're right. Thank you for your apology. Now you're free to leave.
Greta.
He started, his body moving like he was going to make a move to come to me. Don't. I whispered, and he froze. Not again, Hickson. Just don't.
Corinne knows about us.
And another time that night, my head twitched in confusion at his sudden, bewildering announcement. Sorry?
My daughter, Corinne. Hope told her about us. She's not pleased. She sees it as a betrayal of her mother. On the other hand, Shaw already knew. Talk in school, his girlfriend filled him in so he wouldn't get surprised if kids said something to him. He's cool with it, but he wasn't cool with his mother sharing news he knows I would have shared when the time came to share it. He's been having issues with Hope for a while, with what she did to our family. Those came to a head, and right after Corinne blasted me, he called and asked to live with me. All this happened on the way to Becker's. I actually hung up with Shaw getting out of my truck at the foot of the stairs to his house. Then I walked in and got hit with your mom and Becker's form of fun. I took that out on you.
I interrupted him to confirm. You did.
And it was wrong.
He carried on. It was. I agreed.
And I regretted it almost as soon as it happened.
And you show this by calling me the next morning and telling me what I should do when I run my mouth?
Then I was pissed at Lou.
I see. I nodded. And you took that out on me. He bent and leaned into both hands on the back of the couch, his head tipped back to keep hold on my eyes, and I lamented the fact he looked amazing doing that too.
Right.
He started.
I get this doesn't look good for me, and I get why. I totally get that, sweetheart. But I'll point out, I don't usually have a 19-year marriage ending because my wife didn't get a promise from me I'd buy her some fancy-ass ring for our 20th.
He trailed off and studied me, not moving from his position, and I knew I gave it away.
You knew?
He said quietly. I pressed my lips together, but they unpressed themselves to blurt, I'm sorry, Hickson, everyone knew.
Right.
He muttered, oddly not looking pissed out of his brain as he should be.
Whatever.
He kept muttering. Whoa. Whatever? When he spoke again, he wasn't muttering.
I live in a shithole apartment, not big enough for my kids when I have them. And I don't like it much when I don't. My daughter feels I betrayed her mother and her by seeing another woman, and I wasn't with her or in a position to have the time or anything close to it to explain things to her how they should have been explained. My son is setting himself up to despise his mom until his last breath, and I'm struggling with the fact I know I should do something about that, and the understanding, with the harm she's willingly inflicted on our family, I have no motivation to help her repair things with her boy. I was investigating a murder where every second is crucial in the days closest to the event to find as much as we could to catch the killer, and I'm driving 20 miles out to Becker's place for him and your mother to play with me. That was all happening, and I lost it. With you. I regret it, because it was the wrong thing to do, but mostly because you didn't deserve it, and I know I hurt you.
He was calm. He was apologetic. He was making sense. He was taking his time in what was his busy, crazy, messed up life to explain this to me. He was beautiful, all tall and dark and leaning into my couch. But I couldn't do it, because when he'd said he wanted to complicate things with me, I'd never wanted anything more in my life, except Andy to have a happy one. And of course, The time I sat in the waiting room with Keith while Andy was in surgery, wanting Andy to get out of that surgery room alive. I hadn't even wanted Keith that much, and I'd loved him with what I'd thought was every part of me. But with Keith, there was always the knowledge that he gave, I took, and the guilt I carried with me constantly because of that. With Hickson, I got to give. I got to take care of him. I got to be the one he came to when he needed to suck back bourbon, not able to share anything, but wanting to try to unwind from serious business after an incomprehensibly ugly day. He gave, too. He teased me and made me laugh, and looked at me in a way that made me feel beautiful. And he not only showed, but verbalized that he appreciated what I gave to him, and that it meant something. He also didn't hesitate to take all that away. I couldn't do it again. Maybe from the beginning he'd been right. Bad timing. We should have waited. Waited for his life to calm down. Waited for him and his kids to settle into a new life. Just waited. We didn't. And now it was broken in a way it couldn't be fixed. I hated it that he knew he broke it and he was there trying to fix it. And I hated it that I had to tell him it couldn't be fixed. I can't risk it again, Hickson. He kept his place, but dropped his head. God, I hated that too. I'm sorry, I whispered. He tipped his head back and again gave me those blue eyes. I didn't hate those. God.
What we have is good,
he said softly. It's not the right time.
Then we'll give it time.
I shook my head, and I'd thought he'd gutted me the last time he was in my living room. But I was wrong. He gutted me right then.
Greta, you're the finest woman I've ever met. We work together. We fit together. I know you feel it the same as me, and we'd be fools not to see where that would lead. And I don't give a shit all that swirling around me or you. If we can make it through what I did to you, I can earn your trust again, and we can get beyond all that's happening now. I got a strong feeling where it would lead.
I had a good man like you who left me because of my mother, Hickson. She's not going anywhere.
I want to know that story, but I don't care about your mother.
Trust me, I've had 38 years of it, and she's been quiet for a week. She's just sharpening her knives. Eventually, you'll care.
Babe.
It hurts too much what you did to me, I whispered. He shut up. It had only been days, I explained quietly. What happens when I have more and you take it away?
What could happen if that never happens?
He returned. That's not the life I lead. He pushed up from the couch, kept looking me straight in the eyes, and declared,
I'm stronger than that other guy.
You can't know that.
I can, because I know this. If you wanted a $25,000 ring for our anniversary, I'd take a second job to get it for you.
I gasped, and I stared.
And that's because, in 2 days, you gave me more than my wife did in 19 years. Notwithstanding our children and the fact she's got issues, but she's a good mother. That's an uncomfortable realization, sweetheart. And she had her way of doing nice things, but she wasn't you.
You can't know that either.
I can. I do.
Oh my God. Hickson. He lifted one hand and dropped it.
You need time. I'll give it to you. I need time too. Corinne is still pissed and Shaw's not in a good place. But Greta, I leave. It's not my right to ask this of you, but I'm gonna do it anyway. Think about it. Unblock my fucking number. And after I give us time, take my call.
I don't want to hurt you, but I have to say at this juncture, I don't think that's smart, and I say that for the both of us.
You've seen the Avengers movie.
And again, my head twitched. Sorry?
The Avengers movie, you seen it?
Which one? I asked stupidly because I'd seen them all. Andy liked them.
Whatever one.
Yes, all of them. He nodded.
I was a selfish fuck. I get you. I get that guilt you carried in your marriage. I don't know the story. I just know in my way I did that to you. I took from you and I didn't give back. I did that because you came into my life in a time I needed to take. And that'll happen again, but that's not all there is to me. I just need you to think about whether you'll give me the shot to prove it to you.
That was incredibly sweet. Still, why did you ask me about the Avenger movies? He smiled at me, and I wish he hadn't done it.
Because my daughter says boys are stupid. They talk about themselves all the time. Don't ask girls questions. Don't let them talk. Don't listen. And I've unfortunately proved grown men who should know better do that too.
God damn it. Now he was making sense, being sweet, and now kinda cute.
I want to know all about you, Greta.
He said in a voice that sounded like velvet, and felt that way too.
So I'll give you time to think about it. And after you have that time, I hope you give me that privilege. Because before the season ends, I want to go watch my son play ball and have you there, walking out of Raider Field with me next to you. Not Lou.
After delivering that, he turned and strolled to the door. He opened it, stopped, looked at me, and smiled.
Lock this baby.
Then he disappeared. Chapter 15. Dive Under. Greta.
You are not getting back together with that man.
It was the next morning, and I was standing in the back room of the House of Beauty, getting ready for my first client, with Lou, who was also getting ready for hers, and apparently feeling like she could tell me what to do. Needless to say, after she'd shared she'd heard about the grocery store incident, I'd shared what came after. No, I'm not, Lou, I replied, but you have to admit he's had it rough. And that was before some random crazy drifter shot a 28-year-old father of two after he did nothing but stop to help out said random crazy drifter. And it being Hicks who's the guy who has to find some random crazy man that's crazy enough to shoot to death a man with a kind enough heart he'd stop to help him out. Lou looked away and muttered, I gotta admit that's way worse than any day Julie Baker sat in my chair and stared at herself in the mirror after I'd done her hair like she'd allowed a small child with learning disabilities to do it and wondered at her own sanity. She looked back to me. Before, of course, she moved to your chair and did that shit to you. One could say I wasn't too torn up Julie Baker was no longer my client. I'm kind of glad we had it out, I declared. That was a lie. I was not. Before, I was hurt, mad, and sad. Now I was confused, scared, and wondering at my own sanity if I didn't think on it like Hicks asked me to do. And at least this is a better way to leave things than they were before, I went on. And at least that was true. But when Keith told me we were over and I asked why, he said he couldn't live with Mom in his life anymore and he wasn't going to ask me to choose between him and her because he knew I'd choose her. And when he was so done with it, he didn't let me have the opportunity to prove him wrong. I reminded her. And that was also sadly true. I kept going. He loved Andy and would lay down his life for him. I believe that to my soul. He loved me the same way. But he hated her with a passion that was equal to those two things combined. We would argue, but we'd only fight about her. Anytime she asked me for money, he'd get angry. But when I gave it to her, which was too often, I knew that then, I know it better now, he'd lose it. Totally. He got tunnel vision about it. That was all he could see eventually when he looked at me. My weakness about her. The fact he used his hard-earned money to look after Andy, and I used mine to look after her. It just got worse and worse until it consumed everything, including us. And she's already played with Hicks in ways he clearly didn't enjoy.
We're in no doubt about that, she cut in to say irritably. We certainly weren't, me especially.
So I don't need that threat hanging over me, falling in love with a new man.
She stared at me hard and asked, Falling in love? I lifted a shoulder.
He's great.
Babe, I interrupted her before she could get started. He didn't end it in a good way, but that was the only thing bad about it. I fought my lips curving up as I said,
he called me Gumdrop.
How ridiculously sexist, she decreed. I called him Snugglebug. Her eyes bugged out.
You called Hickson Drake Snugglebug?
It was a joke. Both of them were. She pulled herself together after receiving that news, and did it, ending up looking hesitant. The next thing she said explained the look.
I always wondered why you kept helping that woman out.
I looked to the boxes of hair dye and replied,
she's my mom.
Greta. I looked back at her.
You don't get it. You have a great mom. You don't understand. But even how she was with me growing up, if she died when I was 20, I'd still feel it on her birthday. The anniversary of her death, it's just how it is. It's just the connection. It's there, and there's no getting rid of it. Even cutting her out of my life, that connection is still there. It makes no sense. It just is. And maybe I was a slow learner with that, Lou, but also, maybe if I had stopped helping her out, she would have gotten herself in trouble, sick, in prison, out on the streets, dead, who knows? And then it would have been guilt that I wasn't the kind of person who had the fortitude to look after my mother, even if she is how she is. I couldn't win either way. Keith didn't get that, and I understand why he couldn't, but the bottom line is, she's my mom.
Are you gonna let her back in? She asked. I licked my lips, rubbed them together, and lifted a hand to pull out the box of dye I'd be needing.
I don't think so.
And it was what she did to Hicks that pushed it too far?
I looked to her and gave her a smile that even felt sad on my mouth.
She didn't do that to Hicks. She did it to me. She just used Hicks. So, yeah, definitely. That she would go out of her way to find new ways to harm me and do that without compunction, hurting some innocent person just out doing his job, with her knowing that job was a really not fun one at the time. It had always been her manipulating me, using me, lashing out at me. She didn't hurt Andy because she wanted to hurt me. She did it because she's stupid and weak. It was an avoidable accident, but I think I still let her stay in my life because it was that. An accident. This wasn't. She planned what she did to Hicks to get at me. She went out of her way, got others involved, and that kind of malice is too extreme to ignore.
You know, Hickson is right, she told me. Everyone's heard of Kavanaugh Becker. He's kind of our Voldemort. He's the one you don't speak his name. People try to forget he exists, talk about him in whispers. He's not a good guy.
Yep. That sounded like my mother's type.
Marvelous, I muttered.
No matter what happens with you two, babe, Hickson Drake is a good sheriff. Bunch of people saw him up late in his office while that whole thing with Nat started going down. Even before they found Nat's body, word spread he was all over finding him. Everyone talked about how single-minded he was, about doing what he could for Faith and her kids. The man even put on a uniform he never wears and made his crew stand at his side at Nat's funeral to make it known to Faith he has her back. He'd lose his mind if Kavanaugh Becker hurt you. Her lips twitched. And I reckon what he said to you, he'd really lose his mind if that guy hurt you. You'll be okay. And maybe your mom will slink away after a time of not being able to get anything out of you.
I hope so.
But I didn't actually hope so, and not because I never hoped for anything important. I knew she wasn't done. But I did think she'd eventually give up if I had the strength to continue going my own way. She played all her angles, but she wasn't a big fan of expending too much time and effort getting blood from a stone.
Toodaloo! Someone called from the front room. Y'all here?
That'd be mine, Lou murmured and moved to the door, shouting,
in the back, Agnes. Coming right out.
She stopped at it and looked back at me. I never said this because it was too fresh, but you really should know it. Keith messed up, girlfriend. I never met her, but just your stories make her sound like Tawny the Hun. I know with things the way they are with Bill that if you love someone, you put up with all the shit that comes with them. I know a lot of people wonder why I put up with his shit, but the answer was simple. I love him, and I'm sure Keith loved you. He just didn't love you enough.
Thanks, darling, I whispered.
She wasn't quite done. One thing Hicks and Drake is right about, you're worth getting a second job to buy you a big-ass ring if that was what you wanted. Although I'm pissed at him for what he did to you, at least we agree on that. She gave me a smile. And I know that mostly because you're the kind of woman who'd never want that. You'd like getting it, but that isn't what's important to you. She was right. I liked diamonds, but I had a sneaking, confusing, scary suspicion I'd move into a trailer if Hicks and Drake lived in it. And after I'd moved out of my mother's when I was 20, I'd sworn I'd never go back for any reason. Don't make me cry, I ordered. I didn't wear my waterproof mascara. She grinned. Okay, I won't. I'll just say I no longer hate you because you're gorgeous and have a great ass. I hate you now because you get to have a scene in the grocery store with a hot guy pinning you against the celestial seasonings, getting all wound up on your behalf, shouting in your face, then calling you sweetheart. As I've said, I'm pissed at Hicks. But I wasn't even there. I just heard it from 7 sources, and I still know that was hot. It wasn't hot, I shared truthfully. It was kinda scary, and more than kinda annoying. Yeah, I get you thought that then, but now... She shook her head. I'm pissed at Hicks, but I might find my way to unpissed if that gives any indication of how much that man feels for you. And not to give you reason to forgive his badass self for acting like such a huge dick, but I've known Hicks and Drake for years, and I've heard more about him than is healthy for anyone outside Brad Pitt. And he's not the man to cause a scene in a grocery store, Greta. If he lost it in the manner half the women of this town are tittering relentlessly about at this very moment, that says something I don't want to hear about Hicks and Drake right now. That man isn't sheriff. He lives and breathes the responsibility behind that badge. So pinning a woman against the tea selection in a grocery store is not the way he'd go. She paused. I braced. Then she gave me the rest of it. But he saw you with a shiner and he went that way. Yeah, she said contemplatively. That might help me find my way to unpissed. Now you are being scary and annoying, I returned. She rolled her eyes, puckered her lips in a kiss my way, and walked out the door. Gah, Lou. That Friday night, through the applause after I sang Billie Holiday's He's Funny That Way, I murmured, thank you, into the mic. Billy, by the way, was one of the artists I didn't like to sing because you just didn't sing her songs, seeing as you could never do them justice. These, in my estimation, included Barbara Streisand, Dolly Parton, Tina Turner, Celine Dion, Whitney Houston, and Adele. But that wasn't an exhaustive list. However, my pianist, Elvin, the man who set my set lists, lists that would be crowd pleasers for Gemini, made me. It didn't hurt too much, but he always gave me something after he gave me a toughie. And this time, he rewarded me, leading the boys into Annie Lennox's Cold. I loved that song. It fit my voice perfectly, and I loved to wrap it around the icy hot beauty of the lyrics. So I was smiling when I felt my eyelids get lazy as the drummer did his thing. And the others came in, and I fell into the song, standing at the microphone, swaying, my hands suddenly weightless, floating around my hips as my head drifted, the only constant being aiming my lips to the mic. I was finishing the first verse when something caught my attention, and I focused slowly on it, seeing with some surprise Gemini standing close to the stage, something he never did. He didn't sift through the crowd while anyone was performing. It wouldn't do for the host to interrupt a performance in any way. But as I caught sight of him standing right there, blocking people from seeing the stage, his eyes shifted. I followed their direction and saw Hickson sitting at the end of the bar, his eyes locked on me. And somebody kill me. The minute my eyes hit his, they were caught. Trapped. Captive. I couldn't look away. Even as I sensed some members of the audience shifting, twisting in their seats, turning to see who I was singing to. But I was singing words about a woman who wanted to swim in her man's eyes. And I wanted that. I wanted my shot at that. I wanted my shot to swim in the blue of Hicks's eyes for the rest of my life. What I didn't want was for him to know that, but I couldn't look away. Fortunately, as they had wont to do, the song ended. I tore myself out of his spell and forced a smile at the audience, who were clapping somewhat more enthusiastically than usual. My mind hazily attempted to try to remember what song was next, hoping it wouldn't get me into more trouble. Unfortunately, it was the nature of the beast for a lounge singer like me that the next song wasn't much better, but at least it didn't have lyrics about swimming in someone's eyes. It was Eva Cassidy's Fields of Gold. And I managed to sing that and the next four songs of my set without once looking at Hickson. I exited the stage, concealing my haste, I hoped, expressing my gratitude and saying I'd be back. And I sat in my tiny dressing room backstage, yes, hiding, terrified that Gemini was going to come back like he had just a few weeks before to tell me Hicks was out there waiting for me. When the knock came and Gemini swung in, I was holding my breath.
"He left, beautiful,"
he said softly.
"Spoke with me briefly, said he enjoyed the show, but was concerned he was making you uncomfortable. So he asked me to tell you that you looked gorgeous, and then he left."
I blew out a breath, but it wasn't a complete relief. No, because Hickson might have gone, but he'd left only to be thoughtful, and only after saying something sweet.
"Not my place," he didn't ask. "Heard about the grocery store incident,"
Gemini began. Of course he did. Everyone had.
"So I don't know what's happening. I just know you could do worse. And what I know about that man, not sure you could do better,"
he finished. I wasn't sure either. "It's complicated," I whispered.
"It always is,"
he replied kindly.
"You're fabulous out there, as usual. Keep it coming, Greta."
"For you, always, Gemini." He gave me a small smile and ducked out. I looked to the mirror, drew in a breath, and then I went out to get a sparkling water and work the crowd. Late the next morning, I hustled to the door as the doorbell sounded. I opened it and stopped dead, seeing a man standing there holding a huge vase filled with roses, the extraordinary color of deep blue, with creamy calla lilies and dreamy baby's breath tucked tight amongst the azure petals.
"Greta Dare?"
he asked. Yeah, I answered. He shoved the flowers my way.
"Delivery."
I took them.
"Enjoy,"
he muttered, turned and jogged to and down the steps of my porch. I stared after him, then slowly backed out of my door, closing it. It felt like I wafted to the kitchen island, where I set the flowers down, and it felt like it took a year for me to lift my hand to nab the small envelope poking out of the arrangement. I slid my finger under the flap, holding my breath, and I withdrew the card. It was a plain white card that said two words and nothing else. "Dive under." I looked back at the arrangements and stared at it. Those blue roses. I'd never seen blue roses. "Dive under." The lyrics to Cold hit me and I started trembling. God, Hicks could be hot and sweet and classy and a lot of things.